Chapter 27. The Gobi Desert hosts some of the most hostile temperature extremes in the world. Blistering summertime temperatures of over 110 degrees plummet to minus 40 degrees in the winter months. Even in a single day, temperature swings of 60 degrees are not uncommon. Taken from the Mongolian word meaning waterless place, the Gobi rates as the world's fifth largest desert. The arid lands were once an inland sea and, in later eons, a swampy stomping ground for dinosaurs. The Southwest Gobi still rates as a favorite destination for globe-trotting paleontologists in search of pristine fossils. To Pitt and Giordino, the vacant, undulating plains resembled an ocean, though one made of sand, gravel, and stone. Pink sandstone bluffs and craggy red rock outcroppings bounded a gravel plain blanketed with brown, gray, and ebony pebbles. Framed against a crisp blue sky, the barren land teemed with its own brand of wasteland beauty. For the two men trekking across the desolate mantle, the scenic environs were a calming diversion to the fact they were in a potential death zone. The afternoon temperature bounded over the 100-degree mark as the sun seared the rocky ground. The winds had dwindled to a slight breeze, offering all the cooling power of a blowtorch. The two men didn't dare shorten their sleeves or long pants, knowing the ultraviolet ray protection was more important than a slight improvement in comfort. They reluctantly kept their coats as well, tying them around their waists for the chilling night ahead. Tearing a section of the jacket lining out, they fashioned silk bandanas on their heads, which made them look like a pair of wayward pirates. But there was nothing humorous about the task at hand. On their second day without food or water, crossing a baking desert by day while facing near-freezing temperatures at night, they faced the double dangers of dehydration and hypothermia. Strangely, their hunger pangs had gone away, replaced by an unrelenting and unquenchable thirst. The pounds of dust swallowed during the motorcycle ride had hardly improved matters, adding to their dry, constricting throats. To survive the desert heat, Pitt knew that conserving their strength was critical. They could survive 3 days without water, but overexpending themselves in the heat of the day could cut that time in half. Since they were well rested from their morning concealment, they could push their pace for a short while before stopping, Pitt decided. They still had to find civilization in order to survive. Pitt picked out a physical landmark in the distance, then began walking at a measured pace. Every half hour or so, they would seek out a rock formation that offered shade and rest in the shadows, allowing their bodies to cool. The pattern was repeated until the sun finally dipped toward the horizon and the oven-like temperatures fell from high to medium. The Gobi is a large desert and sparsely populated, but it isn't entirely a void. Tiny villages pepper the regions where shallow wells can be dug, while nomadic herders roam the fringes where scrub grass grows. If the men kept moving, they were bound to run into somebody. And Pitt was right. Somewhere to the west was the railroad line from Beijing to Ulaanbaatar and a dusty road that ran parallel to the tracks. But how far was it? Pitt kept them trudging on a westerly track, checking their heading with the sun and his watch. As they marched across the flats, they came to a set of ruts running perpendicular to their path.
"Hallelujah! A sign of life on this ailing planet," Giordino said.
Pitt bent down and studied the tracks. They were clearly made by a jeep or truck, but the edges of the ruts were dull and caked with a light layer of sand.
"They didn't drive by yesterday," Pitt said. "Not worth the detour."
"These tracks could be 5 days old or 5 months old," Pitt said, shaking his head.
Resisting the temptation to see where they led, the two men ignored the tracks and continued on their heading to the west. They would cross a few more tire tracks that trailed off in different directions to places unseen. Like most of Mongolia, there were few formal roads in the desert. Traveling to a destination was simply a matter of point and go. If a satellite in space ever mapped the myriad of lone tracks and trails across Mongolia, it would resemble a plate of spaghetti dropped on the floor. As the sun dipped beneath the horizon, the desert air began to cool. Zapped by the heat and lack of fluids, the weakened men were invigorated by the cool air, and they gradually picked up their pace across the gravel. Pitt had aimed them toward a rocky, three-peaked spire he used as a compass landmark, which they reached shortly after midnight. A clear sky with a bright half-moon had helped illuminate the way under darkness. They stopped and rested on a smooth slab of sandstone, laying down and studying the stars overhead. "The Big Dipper is over there," Giordino said, pointing to the easily identifiable part of the constellation Ursa Major. "And the Little Dipper is visible just above it, which gives us Polaris, or the North Star, at the end of its handle." Pitt rose to his feet and faced toward the North Star, then raised his left arm out from his side. "West," he said, his fingers pointing to a dark ridge a few miles away. "Let's get there before it closes," Giordino replied, grunting slightly as he stood up. The horseshoe in his coat pocket jabbed his side as he rose, and he subconsciously patted the pocket with a knowing smile. With a new compass bearing on the horizon, they set off again. Pitt checked the sky every few minutes, making sure the North Star remained to the right of them. The lack of food and water began to show on the two men as their pace slowed and casual conversation fell silent. The wound in Pitt's leg began to let itself be known, firing a sharp throb with every step of his left foot. The cool night air soon turned chilly, and the men slipped into the coats they had toted around their waists. Walking kept them warm, but consumed crucial body energy that was not being replenished. "You promised me no more deserts after Mali," Giordino said, harking back to the time they nearly perished in the Sahara Desert while tracing a discharge of radioactive pollutants. "I believe I said no more sub-Saharan deserts," Pitt replied. "A technicality. So at what point can we hope that Rudy calls in the Coast Guard?" "I told him to assemble our remaining equipment off the Vereshchagin, and if he could commandeer a truck, then meet us in Ulaanbaatar at the end of the week. I'm afraid our mother hen won't miss us for another 3 days. By which time we will have walked to Ulaanbaatar." Pitt grinned at the notion. Given a supply of water, he had no doubt the tough little Italian could walk to Ulaanbaatar carrying Pitt on his back. But without a source of water, and soon, all bets were off. A cold breeze nipped at them from the north as the night temperature continued to plummet. Moving became an incentive to keep warm, though they took satisfaction in knowing the summer nights had a short duration. Pitt kept them heading toward the ridge to the west, though for a time it seemed as if they weren't moving any closer. After 2 hours of trudging through a valley of loose gravel, they began climbing a series of low, rolling hills. The hills gradually grew in size and height until they crested a high bluff, which abutted the base of the target ridge. After a brief rest, they assaulted the ridge, hiking most of the way up before they were forced to crawl on their hands and knees across a rugged section of boulders near the peak. The climb exhausted the men, and they both stopped and gasped for air when they finally reached the top. A slow-moving cloud blotted the moonlight for several minutes, pitching the ridge top into an oily blackness. Pitt sat down on a mushroom-shaped rock to rest his legs while Giordino hunched over to catch his breath. While still tough as nails, neither man was the spry stallion of a decade earlier. Each silently coped with a litany of aches and pains that racked their legs and body. "My kingdom for a satellite phone," Giordino rasped. "I'd even consider the horse," Pitt replied. As they rested, the silvery half-moon slid from behind the cloud, casting their surroundings in a misty blue glow. Pitt stood and stretched, then gazed down the other side of the ridge. A steep incline sloped into some craggy low bluffs that overlooked a bowl-shaped valley. Pitt studied the small basin, detecting what appeared to be several dark, round shapes sprinkled across the central valley floor. "Ah, check my mirage down the way," he said, pointing to the valley floor. "Tell me if it matches yours."
"If it includes a beer and a submarine sandwich, I can already tell you the answer is yes," Giordino replied, standing upright and walking over to Pitt.
He took a long, patient look down the slope, eventually confirming that he saw nearly 24 black dots spread about the valley floor.
"It ain't Manhattan, but civilization, it appears. The dark spots look to be shaped like Gers. A small settlement, or a group of nomadic herders, perhaps," Pitt speculated. "Big enough that somebody's got to have a coffee pot," Giordino replied, rubbing his hands together to keep warm.
"I'd bank on tea if I were you."
"If it's hot, I'll drink it."
Pitt glanced at his watch, seeing it was nearly 3 a.m.
"If we get going now, we'll be there by sunup. Just in time for breakfast."
The two men took off for the dark camp, working their way cautiously down the short ravine, then snaking their way through the rock-strewn hills. They traveled with a renewed sense of vigor, confident the worst of their ordeal was behind them. Food and water awaited them in the village below, which was now in sight. Their progress slowed as they wound around several vertical uplifts that were too steep to traverse. The jagged rocks gave way to smaller stands of sandstone that the men could climb over and through. Hiking around a blunt mesa, they stopped and rested at the edge of a short plateau. Beneath them, the black-shadowed encampment sat less than a mile away. The first strands of daylight began lightening the eastern sky, but it was still too early to offer much illumination. The main structures of the encampment were clearly visible, dark gray shapes against the light-colored desert floor. Pitt counted 22 of the round tents he knew to be Mongolian Gers. In the distance, they appeared larger than the ones they had seen in Ulaanbaatar and around the countryside. Oddly, there were no lights, lanterns, or fires to be seen. The camp was pitch black. Scattered around the encampment, Pitt and Giordino could make out the dark shadows of animals, denizens of the local herd. They were too far away to tell whether the animals were horses or camels. A fenced corral held some of the herd close to the Gers, while others roamed freely around the area.
"I believe you asked for a horse," Giordino said.
"Let's hope they're not camels." The two men moved easily across the last stretch of ground. They approached within 100 yards of the camp when Pitt suddenly froze. Giordino caught Pitt's abrupt halt and followed suit. He strained his eyes and ears to detect a danger, but noticed nothing out of the ordinary. The night was perfectly still. Not a sound could be heard but for the occasional gust of wind, and he saw no movement around the camp.
"What gives?"
he finally whispered to Pitt.
"The herd," Pitt replied quietly. "They're not moving."
Giordino peered at the host of animals scattered about the darkness, looking for signs of movement. A few yards away, he spotted a trio of fuzzy brown camels standing together, their heads raised in the air. He stared at them for a minute, but they didn't move a muscle.
"Maybe they're asleep," he offered.
"No," Pitt replied. "There is no odor either." Pitt had visited enough farms and ranches to know that the smell of manure was never far from a herd of livestock. He took a few steps forward, creeping up slowly until he stood alongside the three animals. The creatures showed no fear, remaining still even as Pitt swatted one on its furry rump. Giordino looked on in shock as Pitt then grabbed one of the animals around the neck and shoved. The camel didn't resist at all, but keeled stiffly over onto its side. Giordino ran over and stared at the animal, which lay motionless on its back with its legs in the air. Only they weren't legs sticking up, but pieces of 2x4s. The fallen camel, like the rest of the herd, was made of wood.